If you have spent time around TLS certificates, SSH host keys, VPNs, or disk encryption systems, you probably have a fairly practical mental model of public key cryptography. RSA, in that world, is a machine built around multiplication. Multiplying two large primes is easy. Starting with the product and finding the original primes is believed to be hard if the primes are large enough and chosen correctly. Elliptic curve cryptography has a different shape. The arithmetic happens on points of a curve over a finite field, and the hard problem is, roughly, figuring out how many times one point was added to itself to get another point. The details get slippery, but as an operator or system designer, you can live with that abstraction. There is a trapdoor-like operation. Public information lets others encrypt to you or verify your signatures. Private information lets you decrypt or sign. MLChem belongs to the same broad public key family, but the object it gives you is narrower and more specific. It is not a signature algorithm. It is not a general-purpose public key encryption scheme in the old RSA sense, where you might imagine encrypting a small message directly with a public key. It is a key encapsulation mechanism, or KEM. That phrase is worth slowing down for, because it reflects how modern cryptographic protocols are usually built. In most real systems, public key cryptography is not used to encrypt all the application data. It is used to agree on, or transport, a shared secret. Once both sides have that shared secret, they derive symmetric keys and use something like AES-GCM or CHA-CHA-20 Poly-1305 for the bulk traffic. Symmetric cryptography is fast, compact, and well understood. Public key cryptography is expensive and used sparingly. A KEM packages that pattern into three operations. First, there is key generation. The receiver creates a public key and a private key. Second, there is encapsulation. Someone with the public key produces two things, a ciphertext and a shared secret. The ciphertext is sent to the private key holder. Third, there is decapsulation. The private key holder uses the ciphertext to recover the same shared secret. The word ciphertext here can be a little misleading if you are picturing an encrypted file or an encrypted email body. In a KEM, the ciphertext is more like a sealed container holding the conditions needed to reconstruct a secret. The actual payload secret is usually not visible as a message that existed beforehand. It is generated as part of the encapsulation process. This structure maps neatly onto TLS-style handshakes. A client can use a server's public key material or some ephemeral public key exchange mechanism to produce a shared secret. The server recovers the same secret. Then both sides feed it into a key derivation function and continue with symmetric encryption. MLChem is the standardized name for the algorithm that grew out of Crystals Kyber, one of the major winners of the NIST post-quantum cryptography process. The letters stand for Module Lattice-Based Key Encapsulation Mechanism. The old name Kyber is still very common in discussion, code comments, and older documentation. If you see Kyber 768 and MLChem 768, you are looking at closely related, effectively corresponding things, though final standards sometimes include small specification details and naming changes. The reason MLChem exists is not that RSA and elliptic curves are broken by ordinary computers. They are not. The problem is that a sufficiently large, fault-tolerant quantum computer could run Shor's algorithm, which changes the landscape for integer factoring and discrete logarithms. RSA depends on factoring being hard. Traditional finite field Diffie-Hellman and elliptic curve cryptography depend on discrete logarithm problems being hard. Shor's algorithm attacks both categories efficiently, at least in theory, assuming a powerful enough quantum computer. The timeline for such computers is a subject where careful people tend to use cautious language. It is not useful to imagine a switch being flipped tomorrow across all cryptography. But it is also not useful to ignore the problem, especially for data that needs to remain confidential for many years. An attacker can store encrypted traffic now and decrypt it later if the relevant cryptography becomes breakable. This is often called harvest now, decrypt later. That phrase can be overused, but the underlying point is plain enough. A packet capture ages differently depending on what secrets it contains. So MLChem is intended to provide key establishment that remains hard, even for attackers with quantum computers. Insofar as we currently understand the relevant mathematics. The mathematics behind MLChem is lattice-based. That term can make it sound as though you need to picture a crystal structure, and in a loose way, that is not a bad image. A lattice is a regular grid of points extending through space. In two dimensions, the points might look like intersections on graph paper, though real cryptographic lattices exist in very high-dimensional spaces and are described algebraically rather than drawn. Many lattice problems are easy if the grid is simple and the dimensions are low. But in high dimensions, certain tasks appear to become extremely difficult. One famous family of hard problems involves finding short vectors in a lattice. Imagine being given a strange, skewed set of directions that generate a vast grid of points. Somewhere in that grid are points close to the origin, but the description you have may make them hard to find. The shortest paths are hidden by the awkward coordinate system. MLChem is not simply find the shortest vector, but it lives in the same general neighborhood. More specifically, it is based on problems related to module learning with errors, often abbreviated module LWE. To understand that at a hand-wavy but useful level, we can start with learning with errors, or LWE. Suppose you are shown a collection of linear equations involving a secret. If the equations are exact, ordinary algebra can solve them. Given enough equations, you can recover the secret. Not enough noise to make the equation meaningless, but enough to spoil exact solving. You might see many samples of the form, take some known coefficients, combine them with the secret, then add a small random error. Your job is to recover the secret. The error terms are deliberately small, but they are enough to turn simple linear algebra into a much harder problem. In the cryptographic setting, the numbers are not real numbers on paper. They are integers modulo some value, wrapped around in a finite arithmetic system. The secret and the errors have particular distributions. This is the intuition. MLKEM hides secrets behind noisy linear relationships. If you know the private key, you have enough information to remove or tolerate the noise and recover the intended shared secret. If you only know the public values, recovering the secret appears to require solving a hard lattice problem. The module part of module LWE is about structure and efficiency. Plain LWE can involve large matrices and bulky keys. Ring LWE introduced algebraic structure using polynomial rings, which made things smaller and faster, but concentrated more trust in that structure. Module LWE sits between these. It uses modules over polynomial rings, providing efficiency while being somewhat more conservative in structure than pure ring-based versions. You do not need to administer that detail day-to-day, but it explains why the algorithm's name sounds more specialized than just lattice crypto. Now, it helps to look at what the actual MLKEM objects feel like from the outside. There are three standardized parameter sets, MLKEM512, MLKEM768, and MLKEM1024. The numbers do not mean key sizes in bits, they are parameter labels. Roughly, MLKEM512 is aimed at security comparable to AES-128 against classical attack categories. MLKEM-768 at a higher middle level, often compared with AES-192-ish strength. And MLKEM-1024 at a level often compared with AES-256-ish strength. In common protocol deployments, MLKEM-768 is likely to be a frequent default because it gives a comfortable security margin with reasonable size and performance. Compared with elliptic curve Diffie-Hellman, MLKEM public keys and ciphertexts are large. Not enormous in the sense of megabytes, but large enough to notice in handshakes. As a rough feel, MLKEM768 has a public key a little over a kilobyte and a ciphertext a little over a kilobyte. MLKEM512 is somewhat smaller. MLKEM1024 is somewhat larger. A P256 elliptic curve public key is around 65 bytes in uncompressed form, or 33 bytes compressed. X25519 public keys are 32 bytes, so the jump is visible. If you run systems where every byte in a handshake matters, embedded networks, high-scale load balancers, satellite links, strange old appliances, this is not just trivia. It may affect packet fragmentation, handshake latency, memory use, and protocol limits. For normal web TLS, the overhead is often acceptable, but it is not invisible. On the other hand, MLKEM is generally fast. Lattice schemes like Kyber were designed with practical software performance in mind. They use operations on small polynomials and modular arithmetic that modern CPUs can do efficiently. In many settings, CPU cost is not the main obstacle. Size, implementation maturity, side-channel hardening, and protocol integration are often more interesting. It is also useful to separate MLKEM from MLDSA and SLHDSA because the names are easy to blur together. MLKEM is for key encapsulation. It helps two parties derive a shared secret. MLDSA, based on dilithium, is a post-quantum digital signature algorithm. It signs messages or certificates. SLHDSA, based on Sphinx Plus, is another post-quantum signature algorithm, hash-based and quite conservative in assumptions, but with larger signatures and different performance trade-offs. if you are thinking about TLS, MLChem is relevant to the key exchange part. Post-quantum signatures are relevant to certificates and authentication. Those two migrations can happen on different schedules. A TLS session might use a hybrid post-quantum key exchange while still authenticating the server with an ECDSA or RSA certificate. That would protect the confidentiality of the session against future quantum decryption, but the authentication would still depend on traditional signatures at the time of connection. Since signatures are usually verified live and not used to keep past traffic secret in the same way, the risk profile differs. Certificate ecosystems also move slowly, so key exchange has often been the first practical deployment target. The word hybrid appears often in current deployments. A hybrid key exchange combines a traditional algorithm, such as X25519, with MLChem. Both produce shared secrets. The protocol mixes them together, usually through a key derivation function, so the final session keys depend on both. The reasoning is pleasantly cautious. If the classical elliptic curve part remains secure, the session is secure even if a problem is later found in MLChem. If MLChem remains secure against quantum attack, the session resists future quantum decryption, even if elliptic curves fall to a quantum computer. You are not putting all trust in the newer algorithm immediately, and you are not relying only on the older algorithm for long-term confidentiality. This hybrid model is especially attractive during the transition period. Post-quantum cryptography has had years of public analysis, but it is still newer in operational deployment than RSA or ECC. Implementations, protocol edge cases, and side channels take time to mature. Hybrid designs let operators gain protection against the main long-term threat while preserving the safety net of existing cryptography. To understand how MLChem itself works, we can walk through a simplified version. Not the full specification, but enough to give shape to the machine. The private key contains secret mathematical material, including small random values. Small here means small coefficients in a polynomial representation, not short in byte length. The public key is derived from those secrets by multiplying them through public structured randomness and adding noise. This creates those noisy linear relationships mentioned earlier. You can imagine the public key as saying, "Here is a scrambled set of equations involving my secret, with carefully added fuzz." Anyone can use this public key to create a ciphertext. But without the private key, the secret structure behind the fuzz should be infeasible to recover. During encapsulation, the sender uses the receiver's public key, along with fresh randomness, to create a ciphertext. This ciphertext is built so that the receiver, using the private key, can recover a hidden intermediate value. Both sides then hash or derive from that value to get the final shared secret. The hashing steps are not decorative. Modern cryptographic constructions use hash functions and key derivation functions to smooth out internal values, bind inputs together, and protect against subtle attacks. In MLChem, as in many chems, there is also a transformation that turns a scheme with a certain security property into one secure against chosen ciphertext attacks. Chosen ciphertext security means an attacker cannot learn useful information by feeding modified ciphertexts to a decapsulation oracle and observing what happens. In real network protocols, attackers often can send malformed handshakes and watch whether systems accept, reject, log, timeout, or behave oddly. Cryptographic designs must assume hostile interaction. One small but important operational detail follows from this. Decapsulation failure must be handled carefully. In some older cryptographic systems, padding errors or decryption errors became side channels. The classic example is RSA padding oracle attacks, where a server's slightly different behavior on invalid ciphertexts gradually leaked enough information to decrypt messages. MLChem is designed to avoid this style of leakage. Instead of loudly exposing whether an internal decode succeeded in a way useful to attackers, the decapsulation process derives an alternate, pseudo-random shared secret on invalid input. From the outside, failure should not become a helpful oracle. But this depends on correct implementation. Constant time behavior, careful memory access patterns, and uniform error handling matter. This is one reason most sysadmins should not be looking for ways to directly wire a raw MLChem primitive into custom scripts or homegrown protocols. Use it through TLS libraries, SSH implementations, VPN software, or cryptographic libraries that expose high-level, reviewed interfaces. The same advice was true for RSA and ECC, but post-quantum schemes make it freshly relevant because the primitives are unfamiliar and the implementation details are still settling across ecosystems. There is another practical distinction between TEMS and Diffie-Hellman that is worth noticing. In ordinary ephemeral Diffie-Hellman, both sides contribute fresh private randomness and exchange public values. Neither side has a long-term decryption key that can be used to unwrap recorded sessions, assuming ephemeral keys are erased and the handshake is authenticated properly. This gives forward secrecy. A basic chem, by contrast, sounds at first like the sender encrypts to the receiver's static public key, and the receiver's private key decapsulates. If that private key is later stolen, couldn't old captured ciphertext be decapsulated? Yes, if used that way. So protocols need to be designed with forward secrecy in mind, where the server generates temporary ML-chem key pairs for the handshake, or to use chems inside designs that preserve ephemeral behavior. TLS post-quantum key exchange drafts and deployments are careful about this. As an operator, the main point is not to assume the word post-quantum automatically implies all the properties you want. Confidentiality against future quantum attack, authentication, forward secrecy, replay resistance, and downgrade protection are separate properties that a complete protocol must provide. Downgrade protection deserves a brief pause. During transitions, systems often support both old and new algorithms. That is practical, but it creates a question. Can an attacker interfere with negotiations so that two capable peers fall back to weaker cryptography? TLS has mechanisms to bind negotiation into the handshake transcript, so tampering should be detected. But real-world configurations can still accidentally prefer old groups, disable hybrid modes, or allow legacy endpoints to set the effective security level. The danger is less the math fails, and more the configuration quietly never uses the thing you thought you enabled. For ML-chem adoption, a sysadmin's checklist is less about hand-calculating lattice dimensions and more about inventory. What libraries terminate TLS in your environment? OpenSSL, BoringSSL, NSS, WolfSSL, Java's JSSE, Go's CryptoTLS, RussellS, something inside a load balancer appliance? Which versions support post-quantum or hybrid key exchange? Are those features enabled by default, behind flags, or unavailable? Where does TLS actually terminate? At the application? At Nginx or HA proxy? At a cloud load balancer? At a CDN? At a service mesh sidecar? It is common to upgrade an application library and later realize the internet-facing handshake is controlled somewhere else entirely. What clients matter? Browsers, mobile apps, embedded agents, Java services, curl versions, package managers, monitoring probes, old scanners? Post-quantum negotiation has to be compatible. Hybrid key exchange is usually designed to be negotiated only when both sides support it. But middle boxes and old protocol stacks can still surprise you. How do you measure success? Packet captures can show supported groups and selected groups in TLS handshakes. TLS scanning tools may report whether a server supports X251519 MLKEM768 or similarly named hybrid groups, depending on naming conventions at the time. Logs from load balancers or TLS libraries may expose negotiated key exchange groups. Without measurement, cryptographic migration becomes a matter of reading release notes and hoping they correspond to traffic. There is a naming wrinkle here. In TLS experiments and early deployments, you may see names like X251519 Kyber768 Draft 00, X251519 MLKEM768, SecP256R1 MLKEM768, or other hybrid group labels. These names identify combinations of a classical group and a post-quantum KEM, sometimes tied to draft versions. Standardization has been moving, and names in code can lag or reflect compatibility choices. This is normal, but it means documentation from one year may not match packet captures from another. Now, when should ML-chem be good to use? For new public-facing TLS services, once your TLS stack has stable support for standardized hybrid ML-KEM groups, enabling them is generally sensible if compatibility testing is clean. Hybrid mode gives post-quantum confidentiality benefits without abandoning classical assumptions. Large providers have already experimented heavily in this direction, and the performance profile is usually manageable. For internal service-to-service encryption, the answer depends on your platform. If you control both ends and your libraries support it, hybrid ML-chem can be attractive, especially for sensitive long-lived data. But internal systems often involve service meshes, proxies, old runtimes, and compliance tooling. The migration work may be more about ecosystem coordination than crypto. For VPNs, SSH, and messaging systems, adoption will vary by implementation. Some SSH implementations have supported hybrid post-quantum key exchange variants. WireGuard's situation is more conservative and design-specific. It is intentionally small and opinionated, and post-quantum integration is not simply a drop-in parameter change. IPsec ecosystems move through standards and vendor implementations. The practical advice is to track your actual software rather than assume post-quantum has arrived uniformly. For long-term encrypted archives, MLChem by itself is not the main primitive you reach for, unless you are designing a public key wrapping scheme. Usually, you encrypt bulk data symmetrically. Then protect the symmetric key for one or more recipients. Post-quantum recipient key wrapping may become relevant there, but so do signatures, metadata formats, and key rotation. If you use AGE, PGP, CMS, or custom envelope encryption, you need to know whether the recipient key agreement or key transport mechanism is quantum vulnerable. For certificates, remember again that MLChem does not sign. If your question is, should my web server certificate use MLChem? The answer is no, not as a certificate signature algorithm. You would be looking at post-quantum signature schemes for that, and the public CA ecosystem has its own constraints. MLChem may be used in the TLS key exchange, while the certificate remains RSA or ECDSA. One thing that often surprises people is that post-quantum cryptography does not necessarily mean larger symmetric keys everywhere. AES-256 is often mentioned in quantum discussions because Grover's algorithm gives a theoretical quadratic speedup for brute force search. Very loosely, AES-128, under ideal Grover search, has a security level more like 64 bits against a quantum attacker, though the real-world cost model is more complicated. AES-256 gives a larger margin, but the spectacular quantum break applies to RSA and ECC through Shor's algorithm, not to AES in the same way. Hashes and symmetric ciphers are affected differently, so the migration is uneven. Public key algorithms need replacement more urgently than well-chosen symmetric primitives. With MLChem, the dominant worry is not that an administrator will choose MLChem 768 when they should have chosen MLChem 1024 and immediately suffer catastrophe. The more common risks are mundane. One is using non-standard or obsolete draft versions indefinitely. Early Kyber deployments were valuable for testing, but final MLChem standardization matters. Over time, prefer implementations aligned with final standards unless you have a specific compatibility reason. Another is assuming support means enablement. A library may include MLChem, but not negotiate it by default. A FIPS mode may restrict available algorithms until validation catches up. A vendor appliance may advertise post-quantum readiness, but only in a certain firmware branch. Another is forgetting observability. If you cannot tell which handshakes used which key exchange, you cannot manage the transition well. Another is custom cryptography. A chem gives you a shared secret, not a complete secure channel. You still need authentication, transcript binding, key derivation, replay handling, downgrade prevention, and safe error behavior. These are exactly the things mature protocols exist to provide. It is also fair to ask how much confidence we should have in MLChem. The answer is neither blind faith nor suspicion by default. Lattice cryptography has been studied for decades. Kyber went through a long public competition and received extensive analysis. That is meaningful. At the same time, RSA and ECC have longer deployment histories, and post-quantum cryptography as deployed infrastructure is younger. Hybrid mode is the engineering response to that mixed reality. There is a nice, almost physical way to picture the transition. RSA was like trusting that a huge composite number would not be factored. Elliptic curves were like trusting that a path around a strange finite curve could not be retraced. MLChem is more like trusting that a high-dimensional noisy grid cannot be untangled. Each era chooses hard problems that are easy to compute in one direction and hard to reverse without special information. The choice of hard problem changes because the machines available to attackers may change. For a sysadmin, perhaps the most useful mental model is this. MLChem is a post-quantum way to establish shared secrets. It is meant to replace or supplement the key exchange role played by RSA key transport in older systems and Diffie-Hellman or elliptic curve Diffie-Hellman in modern systems. It is based on lattice problems, especially module LWE, where secrets are hidden inside noisy algebraic relationships. It has larger keys and handshake messages than ECC, but generally good performance. It should usually be deployed through hybrid protocol modes during the transition. It does not replace signatures, certificates, symmetric encryption, or protocol design. If you are deciding what to do with it, the first practical move is inventory rather than configuration. Find the cryptographic endpoints. Find the libraries and versions. Find which clients connect. Find whether hybrid MLChem is available and standardized in your stack. Test compatibility. Add visibility. Then enable it where it fits, especially for traffic whose confidentiality needs to survive into an uncertain future. And then, keep watching the ecosystem. Cryptographic migrations do not happen as single events. They are more like changes in the weather across a large region. A browser adds support. A CDN tests it. A TLS library changes a default. A compliance profile lags. A vendor appliance supports it only on new hardware. A packet capture suddenly shows a new supported group name that looks half familiar and half invented. Documentation catches up later. NLChem is one of the central pieces of that weather pattern. It is not the whole storm, and not the shelter by itself. But it is a practical, standardized tool for the part of the problem that matters most to recorded encrypted traffic. How two systems agree on secrets when the old public key assumptions may not be enough forever.